Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice, that's why. All my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding all my life.
Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live. I am Sterling Holmes, live in studio. Darren Smith. He is rocking his Gate shirt on right now. You should have let me know. I would have got mine on. We could have been matching today.
No, we can't do that today.
Why not? Come on, it's Red Friday. We could have matched for Red Friday with some Gates.
That's true. That's fair. First of all, I want to thank everyone for tuning and listening to us on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM for Red Friday, along with, of course, this being Football Friday. Still got a big show today. Obviously, we will be speaking with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Bob Kendrick. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about the announcement that was made on yesterday between the Negro League Baseball Museum and the partnerships that they have with the Kansas City T-Bones, now known as the Kansas City Monarchs. We'll talk about the iteration of that, as well as, of course, we'll get his thoughts on the passing of his friend, Henry Hank Aaron, who passed away today at the age of 86. Not only a Major League Baseball icon, but a worldwide icon as well. But first things first, Football Friday. It is championship weekend here in Kansas City, along with Green Bay up in Lambeau, up in Wisconsin. Let's look at Kansas City's game. Of course, the big announcement is it shouldn't come as a shock to anyone, but Patrick Mahomes has been cleared to play in Sunday's game. He's gone through and cleared concussion protocol. He will line up under center on Sunday. As I mentioned on Monday, unless the Raptor was coming back before Sunday's game, Patrick Mahomes was going to be starting in that game. So, Sterling, Kansas City hosts the Buffalo Bills, 15-3. They come into Arrowhead Stadium, Chiefs of 15-2. Patrick will be under center. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like you and I both said pretty much from the get-go, this is no surprise. We all knew Patrick Mahomes was going to be playing in this game. This is just the official final marker. It was funny. They didn't even really say anything. All of a sudden, they said Mahomes is going to be at the podium, and everyone goes, okay, there you go. Before even the word came out that he was officially cleared to go, they said he was going to be at the podium, and that's when you knew that he had officially cleared all of the concussion protocol steps. Again, we both say we don't even think this was a concussion. We don't know what the question was that he got wrong during the game, which led him to not being able to return. But the more we think about it, maybe he literally just messed up a question, because all indications are starting to lead towards maybe he didn't even have a concussion to begin with.
Well, yeah. I mean, even he said that he didn't have a concussion, just more so how he just kind of fell awkwardly when he was dragged down and lost his balance.
But I want to know the question. That's what I want to know, the question he got wrong, because that may clear up the questions for us.
You know what? They probably asked him, what's the number one barbecue place in Kansas City? He might have said Gates, and they might have been like, no, that's Joe's Barbecue. You're wrong. You can't go back in there. So I who knows? But look, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that Kansas City will have their starting quarterback in the game on Sunday. But looking ahead, of course, we've got Randy asking the same question they asked me. Enemy, that's a good one. Looking at the game Sunday, obviously you've been high on quarterback Josh Allen, of course. Yeah. This is, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday about the pressure that he may be under. But your thoughts on this game, the matchup, Josh Allen with his offensive weapons going up against Kansas City's defense.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be obviously a very good game. I think these are the two best teams in the AFC. I've said it since basically the start of the season. These are the two best teams, and they're finally meeting each other in the AFC Championship game. They played early on in the season. I think Buffalo took a little bit of time to find their stride. The Chiefs have not been as explosive of late, but the defense has stepped up huge. I'm expecting a close game here. I don't think this is going to be a blow-up by any means. As much as I want to say the Chiefs take care of business and hammer the Bills, I think it's going to come down to a three-point game, a two-point game. I think it is going to be along the spread line that Vegas has. It's going to come down to who has more weapons, and I think Mahomes has more weapons. I just do. I think, especially if Sammy Watkins can go, this offense is just too lethal. They've been here before. The Chiefs have been in this situation from the AFC Championship game in 2018 to last year winning it and now this. When you are a seasoned veteran team, that matters in close games where both teams, I think, are very evenly matched up. What do you think here, Darren?
Well, look, to no one's surprise, of course, I have Kansas City winning this game. I've had to win in every game that they've took, that they've taken to the field. For me, the key to this game is more of a mental thing. Kansas City knows what it's like to win as well as to lose on their home field in this championship game, of course. One of the things that kind of goes unnoticed is that you got to remember the AFC Championship is named the Lamar Hunt Trophy. And so, losing the first time around to New England left a bitter pill and a bitter taste in their mouth. They wanted to make sure that they did not repeat that last year when they defeated the Tennessee Titans. And one of the things that I think that we have overlooked, and a lot of people have overlooked, is the importance to winning this particular game, more so than the Super Bowl, but because of who and what the AFC Championship represents. And so, I know we haven't talked about it, if at all, this week on our stations, but it is very important for the Chiefs to win this because they want to win this particular game because of it being the owner, because the trophy being named after the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, Lamar Hunt, which is, of course, Clark Hunt's father. So that means a lot to Andy Reid and to the players in general. And then, of course, obviously by winning the game, then you punch your ticket into the Super Bowl. But that's something that, that they haven't really, no one really talked about, but that is something very important to the team and the organization itself. As it relates to the Buffalo Bills, for Kansas City, to me, to take on and beat Buffalo 1, you got to protect Patrick at all costs, and even if that means protecting Patrick from himself. Obviously, he will run the football. He will try to show that, he didn't suffer a concussion. So Patrick is going to be the daredevil himself in Sunday's game. I think it's all going to come down to the coin toss. We'll see. Obviously, if Kansas City wins the coin toss, they will elect to defer. That's just something that Andy Reid has gotten a habit into. But if Buffalo wins the coin toss, if you're Buffalo, do you try to defer? Do you, do you put Kansas City and Patrick's offense out there first and foremost to see, how he reacts right away? Or do you want to go out there, try to set the tone offensively, try to get on top of the Chiefs first and then let them play from behind? So, I think it's all going to start, obviously, with the coin toss. And then who's going to win the line of scrimmage? I kind of harp on that week in and week out. But, again, to me, if we don't hear Frank Clark and Chris Jones early and often in the game, I think that's going to pose a problem for Kansas City.
So as far as the coin toss goes, most teams have gone to the defer method just because you get the chance of getting the ball twice in a row, getting the ball before half and then get the ball after half. Seemingly all teams defer now. We saw it worked against teams like Cleveland, for example, teams that need to get the ball first because they can't play from behind. Buffalo's a team that can play from behind, so that wouldn't surprise me too much if they did defer. I think they probably would. As far as this goes, though, their defense has really come on of late. Same with the Chiefs. Both of these two teams, the defense has come on strong of late. Even though Buffalo gives up 422 yards of offense, that's a lot of yards given up per game. They only average giving up 13.5 points per game. So to me, it's going to come down to the Chiefs scoring in the red zone. It's imperative that the Chiefs get it done in the red zone. We've seen them have struggles before. That can't happen.
I mean, look, they struggled most of the season. Obviously, now, it's interesting to say that because last week, they actually, obviously before Patrick went down with the injury, they actually were pretty, I think they scored 2 touchdowns inside the red zone. So, they've been better, but obviously they can be a whole lot more better than what we've seen thus far.
Yeah, because I think, again, that comes down to in games where two teams are very evenly matched, you're not playing the New York Jets where you can kick some field goals and get away with it. The Bills' offense, they're going to score their own points. You're not going to keep the Bills to scoring 7 or 14 points. So, for me, red zone scoring is going to be imperative, and it's going to be magnified, honestly, in this game. I'm with you. I think Chris Jones and Frank Clark, they need to get pressure on Josh Allen. Josh Allen has shown he can get flustered. I don't know if he's the same Josh Allen as last year where he literally looks like he dropped acid or LSD and tries to throw a football because that was ridiculous. I think that Josh Allen's behind him, but we've still seen him get flustered before. So you need to put pressure, and those $20 million dudes, this is why they're getting paid. Go out and perform.
Oh, of course. Hey man, look, I've been on them all season. I've been calling the witness protection. I still got people up in Washington D.C. that I'm good with the Secret Service and the U.S. Marshals. I've been trying to figure out, had they been admitted into witness protection, because a lot of times throughout the season they haven't been able to be found. I know last week in the fourth quarter, Chris Jones, I think he got a hand in on Baker Mayfield. Look, at the end of the day, this is what needs to happen. We brought in Steve Spagnuolo for reasons like this. We brought him in the AFC Championship game. We brought him in to beat New England. Brought him in to win the Super Bowl. This is where, obviously, everybody, as Tyron would like to say, rent is due. So, to me, this is the weekend that the rent is due on the Kansas City defense. This is where you come. This is where you show up. And look, Patrick has said, and we talked about it earlier in the week, that if they have to run the football to beat Buffalo, he's fine. He's fine with that. Remember, they scored 26 points in that game. Patrick threw for 2 touchdowns, but they ran the ball for 245 yards. Now I haven't gotten the injured list yet for Sunday. For Sunday's game, so I don't know the exact status of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Sammy Watkins right now.
The biggest update I have is Le'Veon Bell, Rashad Fenton, Sammy, and Clyde are questionable. The questionable for Clyde comes as of today, and then Willie Gay Jr. Is listed officially as out. So Willie Gay Jr. is out, which I think is a pretty big deal. I mean, I know he's a rookie, but he was coming on strong late in the season. If you like buying into what PFF says, Pro Football Focus, he has been graded and ranked extremely high. So in his limited snaps and limited capacity, he's been very effective. So I do think Willie Gay Jr. being out can be a pretty big letdown.
Don't disagree with you at all on that. I'm not resting my hopes on a rookie linebacker to get us to the Super Bowl. So, again, to me, this is what we pay our money players for. So, you got Patrick, you got Travis Kelce, you got Tyreek Hill on the offensive side of the ball. Sammy Watkins, if he's able to play, if he suits up and he's out there, then we expect him to play at a high level. On the defensive side of the ball, again, you're looking at Frank, you're looking at Tyron, you're looking at Chris Jones. I mean, I can't stress enough to where you don't want to be 1-2. Hosting the AFC Championship games in Kansas City. The mayor earlier today, has already said that, we are the new home of the AFC Championship game. So, he's already called it for years to come. We talked about a little bit yesterday about the pressure. Again, I say that, and it may be an unpopular opinion, but I do believe there's more pressure on Patrick to get to and win this Super Bowl this year than it is for Josh Allen. And the reason why I say that once again, we talked about how long it's been since who? Aaron Rodgers has been in and won the Super Bowl. He's only been there one time. He won it 10 years ago. The following year, their team is 15-1. They lost in the first game of the playoff for them, and they haven't been back since now. They've been to three NFC championship games since then, and they've lost all three. There is no guarantee for Patrick or any quarterback that once you get there and win it, that you can go back and get there again. Everybody thought Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers would go back and play in multiple Super Bowls. That has not happened. So for the legacy of Patrick and to build on this aura that he already has, that everybody said he's the best player, blah, 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 you need to go back, especially when you're playing it on your own home field and you got the crowd, you got everything going in your favor. You have to win this game.
You want to hear some legacy stats that go in the Chiefs' favor here?
Go for it.
So, in the past 11 teams who have won a Super Bowl and who are now hosting a conference championship, those teams are 10-1. The only team to lose was a 1990 49ers. So if you're looking for some stats that may be skewing the Chiefs' favor from the past, if history can repeat itself, you're probably liking these odds right here. By the way, the Bills losing those four straight Super Bowls has to be one of the most heartbreaking stretches in all of football, in all of sports. I mean, just looking at again, them losing four straight from 1990 to 1993, they've not won any kind of championship since the 1965 AFL championship. So the Bills, it's been a while for them.
Oh, I mean, you're telling me like I'm going to shed any tears. I'm not doing that at all whatsoever. Sterling, because of the time and what we have, let's go on and get to our prediction on this, and then let's jump to the NFC before we bring Mr. Kendrick on at the bottom of the hour.
Perfect. I'll go first if you want me to. I got the Chiefs winning 27, Bills 26. I think it comes down to a Harrison Butker field goal that I think he drills. Yeah. Give me Bills 26, Chiefs winning the game 27-26. Harrison Butker kicks the game winner.
First of all, if we have to depend on Harrison Butker to get to the Super Bowl, that's a problem within itself. So, no, I'm not going there. I think the Chiefs offensively, I think the magic number is 30. I believe Patrick gets to the game healthy. I see Kansas City getting on top of Buffalo, never relinquishing. This is the first complete game that they play in some time. I got Kansas City winning this game 31-17. Over Buffalo, two touchdown win. They actually cover the spread. They cover.
They're 1-8 in their last spread games, baby. 1-8.
I understand, but this is also the AFC Championship game. They know that they can't afford to have a close game. They can't afford to put the game in the hands or in the foot of a kicker, especially someone who leaves points on the board. And if I'm Patrick, if I'm Andy, there's no way I'm depending on Harrison Butker to win the game.
It's more or less just a joke because I know how much it gets on you. But no, I do.
It might be a joke to you, but that's serious.
I do think it's going to be an extremely close game. I do think it's going to be 27-26 around there. The Chiefs have not blown any teams out. They just have not lately. It's been, they're again 1-8 in the past 9 games against the spread, and guess what? They're 8-1. It's not like they're losing football games by doing this, and it's just they play close games, and that's fine as long as you come out winning close games. A win is a win at the end of the day, and I expect Kansas City to win. I just think it's going to be a very close game.
No. Look, I'm fine with that, but again, at the end of the day, I just believe. You know, I just believe that Kansas City is going to get things together. Here's the thing, man. You don't want to put yourself in a situation where you know, where it comes down to a kicker where it's 27-26.
Oh, you never want to.
That's just too close. No, well, I understand it, but I'm saying just you have it as a one-point game. You think it's going to go down to the wire. I don't think that it's going to get to that. I mean, that's just the way it is. I think Kansas City, knowing what's at stake, knowing that they want to run it back, knowing that they, you know, they have a legacy that they're hoping to build up to, there's no way that, in my opinion, that they're going to make it or they're going to allow it to be as close. Again, look, one thing that Kansas City does do, you know, sometimes a team does score first and then they have to come back from behind, like kind of like the Miami Dolphins. They were down 10-0 and then right off 30 straight points. You know, now if you want to say it gets close, okay, they get some garbage touchdowns late in the ball game to make the score a little bit more respectable. But I think at the end of the day, Kansas City wins it convincingly at home, you know, 31-17.
Hey, at the end of the day, I don't care how Kansas City comes away with a victory as long as they come away with a victory. I think that's what matters in the end. Going to the NFC game, Buccaneers and Packers. This should be a great game. Your Bucs making it to the NFC Championship game. Tom Brady making it back, proving Bill Belichick and all of the system quarterback talk wrong. Who do you have here?
Well, I don't think it's no secret. I mean, I think before the season, I think I'm the only one at the station on record of having the Chiefs against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I still have Buccaneers winning on Sunday. I'm not going to be like some people and go against my original pick. And I know you.
I didn't. I went with Saints. I stuck by it. I lived and died by that pick.
Exactly. Which I try to get you. I try to get you and Steve on the right track.
I couldn't.
Y'all pride, y'all Eagles. You know, it is what it is. Look, I do know Antonio Brown is not playing in the game Sunday, but Antonio Brown wasn't going to be the reason for the Chiefs winning this game. I'm sorry, for the Bucs winning this game on Sunday in Lambeau. Obviously, the weather could be a factor, but I think it's going to be 30 degrees. There might be some light snow flurries early in the day. I don't think that that's going to be much of an issue. I think, again, everything starts to me with the line of scrimmage. How much pressure is Green Bay able to get on Tom Brady? The line for, which has kind of gone unnoticed, the offensive line protecting Tom Brady has been masterful. These last two ball games, especially I think they faced off against the number two defense in the Washington football team, Chase Young. I think they only gave him maybe one sack late in the ball game to Tom Brady. I think they may have given him maybe one sack last week against the New Orleans Saints. But you know, Tom Brady was playing exceptional, turnover free football with that offense. Now, obviously, the defense made turnovers and put them in good field position. What I see happening is kind of a repeat. I think Tampa, what they did in New Orleans, they bring that same type of style of play, the same type of defense up at Lambeau Field. I think they get after Aaron Rodgers. Look, there's no love lost between Rodgers and Ndamukong Suh, and I believe he gets to him in that game early and often. And puts count. Now, the one thing that works in Green Bay favor is that Aaron Rodgers can scramble and he can beat you on there. But I believe that they just don't have. I really believe that they don't have enough weapons. And as great as Devontae Adams is, as great as Aaron Jones is, Tampa Bay is going to be able to take something away, whether it's just a run game and you have to try to beat them in the air. That may be the scenario, the situation that they find themselves in. But I really think that Tampa Bay, for them to win, I think they'll play mistake-free football in beating the Bucs.
So I'm sorry, in beating
the Packers.
I have another very close game here. I have another one-point game, 24-23. I think Packers come away. I think it does help them being at home. They're going to have about 10% capacity, anywhere from 8,500 to 9,000 fans, which, again, if you haven't had fans all season, that seems like a good amount of people. That's going to be an actual game-changing factor. I think Aaron Rodgers is just playing too good right now. This is the best we've seen him in the past couple of seasons, honestly. And I just like this Packers team. The defense is playing better for them. And they have, to me, the X factor, which is Devontae Adams. I think Devontae Adams is probably the best wide receiver playing football right now. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love DeAndre Hopkins, but Devontae Adams has been just an absolute workhorse this season. He has, what, 18 touchdowns? I mean, it's summer. He's just on another level right now with Aaron Rodgers. That connection is just so impactful. I think they go to that well time and time again, and I think it pays off.
Look, I don't disagree at all. To me, if the Saints would have won last week's game, I would probably go with the Packers, and not despite anything. I just think that, I'm just looking. I'm more so thinking more so about matchups and how teams play one another. These two teams played each other, obviously, I think it was week number six, the same weekend Kansas City played the Bills. And even though that game was in Tampa Bay and, obviously weather and different things took place, I still like the aggressiveness that Tampa Bay put up against Green Bay. Now, Green Bay, to their credit, if they're smart, obviously they will probably, you know, be better prepared for that. I just think, man, I just think that Tampa Bay has a lot more weapons on offense when they have the ball. And look, I think that they can go score for score, but I just think methodically Tom Brady is going to beat them mentally to where, you know, he'll methodically march up and down the field to keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline. And if they can take away Devontae Adams, you're going to have to force Aaron Rodgers to utilize some of the other weapons, Lazard and maybe the tight end. But there's no guarantee that, you know, that they'll be able to step up like you would a Devontae Adams. Now, you know, the Bucs don't have a Jalen Ramsey, so to speak, but they have enough talented players. They got enough named players to where, again, I think it's going to be a very close game. But I do have the Bucs winning this game. I think I said 31-28. If I didn't get my score earlier, that's my score, 31-28 Buccaneers.
So close game, though. So you're going with close game.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I think the Bucs have a lot of talent, but that secondary of Tampa Bay scares me. I don't think they're that good. We saw Tyreek Hill just completely I've never felt sorry for another grown man. Like that cornerback that was going up against Tyreek Hill, I felt sorry for. I go, what have you done?
But Tyreek is still a different beast than even Devontae Adams. I mean, because one, you know, Tyreek. Hell, that's enough right there. I mean, because you can single, like Jalen Ramsey was able to single cover Devontae Adams. You cannot single cover Tyreek Hill. That's a big difference.
They don't have Jalen Ramsey, so I don't know why that goes into the equation. Jalen Ramsey has nothing. He's not playing.
I understand, but what I'm saying is speed-wise, nobody in the league can single cover Tyreek. You can single cover if you got that dude, Devontae Adams, just like the Rams did.
My point is Tampa Bay does not have that dude.
Yeah, but again, I mean, they may not have it, but you know what? But they can do it and have single high safety or whatever where you can dedicate. But you're going to dedicate two people at least for Tyreek versus what you may have to do with Devontae.
If you do that, you're going to give up 18 touchdowns again like you had this season. But we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Bob Kendrick. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
All right, we are back here on Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 15:10 AM. We are joined now on the phone line by a very special guest, a very good friend of mine personally, Mr. Bob Kendrick, the executive director of the Negro League Baseball Museum. Mr. Kendrick, are you on with myself and Sterling? Good afternoon to you. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, Darren, man, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, thank you so much. Want to first get your thoughts and let you expound, if you would, on your relationship and on the death today of not only a Major League Baseball icon, but a worldwide icon in Henry Louis Hank Aaron, who passed away at the age of 86 today.
Yeah, it's been, as you can well imagine, a very difficult day for all of us at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum because we lost an important part of the museum's family and the Negro Leagues family, and Darren, someone who meant a great deal to me both professionally and personally. Henry Aaron was my childhood idol, my all-time favorite baseball player, and to have the opportunity to tour him through the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in 1999 is one of the most memorable experiences for me in all of my years of involvement with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And as you well know, man, we've been fortunate to host American presidents and first ladies of these United States of America, General Colin Powell, other dignitaries, athletes and entertainers. And as I oftentimes have said, with no disrespect to any of them, they're not Henry Aaron in the eyes of this kid from Crawfordville, Georgia. And so, yeah, this one hit home. And again, it is part of what we deal with every single day here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. We experience a lot of loss. And, you know, but this has been a challenging day. I'm sure as the day wears on and, you know, I've been kind of doing media interviews ever since the news actually hit, I'm sure I'll reflect on what Henry Aaron really meant to me, but also what he gave us, what he left us. And we're very fortunate that we had a Henry Aaron. And I think you hit it. You hit the nail right on the head. You can never reduce Henry Aaron's career to just being a baseball player. He was a world icon. He was a civil rights icon. He was a humanitarian. And he left us so much that I'm sure we'll cling to, that will help relieve the sadness of losing someone that you love. And as typical, when you lose someone that you love, you know, you're not mourning for them. We're mourning for ourselves because we've lost somebody that we don't want to lose. And I know that. And I'll embrace the good times that I was able to have with him. And, man, how special is it? Because most of the time, our sports heroes, we idolize them from afar. And we don't get an opportunity to meet them up close and personal. And for this kid from Crawfordville, Georgia, I had that opportunity. And it is something that meant the world to me.
You know, Bob, I got a chance to meet Mr. Aaron when I was in college. And even back then, you know, I grew up under Max Sports Clay over at 103. And so when I had the opportunity, we had our national alumni in the city of Atlanta, got a chance to meet him. I got a chance to meet Ambassador Andrew Young, and, you know, and so the president of our institution, you know, had me in this room, in this meeting, you know, with these two legends. And so, you know, for someone who likes to talk, this is one of the few times that even I knew when I come into a place, I sit down, I shut up, and I just listen. And no one had to tell me anything, but just the fact that I was able to sit there and just be within, just in the presence of greatness, you know, was a humbling experience. It's hard to quantify into words, because you hear, you know, we talk about Jackie Robinson and the hatred and the racism that he went through just by being the first to integrate into Major League Baseball. But sometimes we forget the hatred and the racism that he went through in pursuing and breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. If you would talk a little bit about that and the journey that he sacrificed his own safety in the breaking that record.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you think about that, Darren, this is 27 years after Robinson breaks the color barrier, as Henry Aaron is making this ascent on Ruth's record, a record that most sports folks thought would never be broken, no less by a black man in the Deep South. And he is going through the same level of hate and vitriol that Jackie Robinson experienced as he was being welcomed into Major League Baseball 27 years later. His family is in hiding. He's got bags and bags of death threats. And please understand, for a black man in the Deep South at that time, there were no idle death threats. You had to take this stuff as legit, because Henry Aaron had already seen Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. assassinated. He had already seen John F. Kennedy assassinated. He had seen Malcolm X assassinated. So this is very real, and you don't know if you're going to make it around the bases, and yet somehow he found the wherewithal to push all of that aside and focus on the task at hand, and he's handled this with such great class and dignity in the face of insurmountable pressure, and still had the innateness to not harbor hate for those who had tried to perpetrate hate against him. And I think, in my eyes, that is why he was so special. Henry Aaron is one of the greatest baseball players to ever play this game. 755 home runs. If you took all 755 home runs away, he'd have over 3,000 hits. His total base record will likely never be eclipsed. I'm not sure his RBI record will ever be broken. He was a great defensive outfielder. He made all the right plays. He threw to the right base. He took the extra base when he was supposed to. He was a great hitter, a great clutch hitter, and you cannot reduce his life to baseball. because as great as he was at his craft, he was even better as a human being.
I mean, his whole entire story should be remembered in American history books for centuries to come. Let this sink in. This wasn't even, we're not talking about hundreds of years ago. This was,
no.
I mean, this was 50, 40 plus.
Yeah.
I mean, and just to think of that, someone who wasn't even around then for me, I'm 26. To me, that's almost impossible to fathom. But less than 50 years ago, something like this happened in the face of racism, death threats, and he said and did everything he possibly could to break this, to be an amazing human being. It's just, it's mind-blowing to me as someone at this age to think that not even 50 years ago, a man was getting death threats because of the color of his skin, and he was able to persevere, to persevere and do this. It's just, this should be the American story that's told in history books for centuries to come.
Well, and I do sometimes think that his story is oftentimes overlooked in terms of what it meant in the echelon of civil rights and social justice in this country. And you're right. It should be a story that we should never forget. And we should always be reminded of the sacrifice that Henry Aaron made in his pursuit of not only trying to help make the game better, but make our country better. And as he continued to ascend in his career and become the great businessman that he became and this humanitarian, one of the most giving individuals that you would ever meet, at the forefront of his existence was always trying to create a life that was better for those who have been somewhat marginalized in this country. You know, creating groundwork for equality for those who look like him. And he dedicated his life to that. And so I think he was as proud of what he had done as a human being than he was of anything that he ever accomplished playing the game of baseball.
Bob Kendrick, the executive director, joining us from the Negro League Baseball Museum, talking about his good friend and obviously the world icon of Henry Louis Hank Aaron, passing away today at the age of 86. Bob, before we go further, you know, would you please share with the people Hank Aaron's contribution to the Negro League to itself? Because I think a lot of people kind of forget that, you know, I think, you know, he had the history with the Negro Leagues.
Yeah, no, he comes to the Negro League, guys, when he was 18 years old, Mobile, Alabama. We've got a great picture of him standing at the train station in Mobile, and Darren, all he has is a duffel bag at his feet. And he told me inside that duffel bag, he may have had two changes of clothes, $1.50 in his pocket, and a ham sandwich that his mama had made him going to go chase that dream, leaving Mobile likely for the first time to go join the Indianapolis Clowns. He joins the Clowns as a skinny, cross-handed hitting shortstop. Henry Aaron may have weighed 150 pounds at best, and he was hitting cross-handed. And for those who might be hearing that expression for the first time, in Henry Aaron's case, he was a right-hand hitter who was hitting with his left hand on top. That is unorthodox. The fear is that you would break your wrist hitting in that manner. Fellas, Henry Aaron was knocking the cover off the baseball in a highly unorthodox fashion. When he gets to the Clowns, they put the right hand on top. And the rest, as we say, is history. But he told me, he says, Bob, I didn't know if I was leaving home to go play with kids my own age or grown men. Well, as we know, he was going to play with grown men. But let me tell you this. Those grown men for the Indianapolis Clowns took this young kid under their wings. They nurtured him, and they protected him. And when Henry Aaron left to go to the major leagues, he took them with them. He took their spirit with them. And they made it when he made it. And to me, that was that nurturing spirit of Negro Leagues. They knew that they were too old to get to the Major Leagues. But they had one of their own that had an opportunity. And then he was going to be the bridge that would help others get that opportunity. But it all starts in the Negro Leagues for this guy named Henry Aaron. And Buck O'Neill says the first time he saw Henry, 1952 spring training, the Monarchs are playing the Indianapolis Clowns in Mobile. And so he goes out to exchange lineup cards with the Clowns manager, Buster Haywood. And so he gets the card and he looks Aaron in the third spot and he sees his kid Aaron in the lineup. Now, he knew all the players from the Clowns. And he says, Buster, who's this kid Aaron? And he says, Buster starts grinning, and he looks at him and says, Buck, you got to see him. And Buck said, okay, well, we'll see what he got. By the time the game was over, Henry Aaron had gone 4-for-4 with 2 home runs. And so Buster and Buck are at dinner that night, and Buck said, well, Buster, I ain't going to have to worry about that kid Aaron by the time you get to Kansas City. He said, Buck, what you talking about? He said, somebody going to sign him. And sure enough, the Braves signed him away. At that time, they were the Boston Braves, who would become the Milwaukee Braves, who, of course, would become the Atlanta Braves. Henry Aaron will go down in this sport as one of his all-time greatest players.
Bob, I want to ask you, because you are someone, obviously, who loves the sport, loves the sport of baseball, as do myself and Sterling. How do you hope and how do you think Major League Baseball is going to remember Hank Aaron? I know it's kind of like the off season right now, but when the season opens back up, how do you think that Major League Baseball will honor the life of Henry Lewis?
Well,
I'm sorry.
What I know is that Henry Aaron was very close to Commissioner Manfred. And so I have no doubt that baseball will do a tremendous job. And baseball always does a great job of recognizing his own and celebrating his own. And so the legends of our game. And so it would not surprise me if people are wearing the 44 patch throughout baseball. I'm sure there'll be some meaningful celebrations. I had just a few weeks ago, when baseball announced that it was recognizing the Negro Leagues as major leagues, he and I did an interview on the Today Show. And as you can well imagine, his segment on the show was much larger, longer than my segment. But had it been me, I would have made his segment longer than mine, too. And he was so proud, though. He was so proud that the Negro Leagues had received this atonement and recognition from Major League Baseball, because he, too, knew how good the players were in the Negro League. So I have no doubt that Major League Baseball will do an amazing job of honoring someone who gave to this game as much as anyone ever gave to this game.
So I personally think that he is the all-time home run leader. Barry Bonds, the steroids for me muddles it up at least a little bit. But now with the inclusion of Negro League previous stats, does that change his home run totals at all?
It won't, unfortunately, because they didn't take the years far enough. They cut it off at 48. I always believed that they should have gone into the early 1950s, which would have encompassed his year in the Negro Leagues. And so, unfortunately, it won't change his numbers. It changes Willie Mays' numbers a little bit, and those who had considerable tenure in the Negro Leagues who then transition into the Major Leagues, but it won't have any impact on Mr. Aaron's numbers.
Bob, I want to ask you, of course, we're joined again by Bob Kendrick, the Executive Director of the Negro League Baseball Museum. Where did the iteration or where did the conversation begin with the Kansas City T-Bones in the renaming of their team and organization to become the Kansas City Monarchs? Where did that idea come from?
Well, the conversation started about 4 or 5 months ago. Mark Brandmeier, who is the new owner of now the Kansas City Monarchs, approached me about this notion of rebranding the team that he had bought and naming them the Kansas City Monarchs. So it was his epiphany. It was his brainchild. And initially, I was a little hesitant because, as you know, the Monarchs is our flagship brand. And
it belonged to us. It belongs to us.
But as I got to know Mark better and got to see his business plan and then the realization of what a museum is supposed to do, and that's create relevancy. Yeah. And to have this brand, this historic and iconic brand, come back to life is a great way to create relevancy. And to extend the Negro Leagues Museum out to Western Wyandotte County, where they play ball. And guys, every time these young players, and these are young players through the relationship that they have in the American Association and the agreement that they have with Major League Baseball, these are all players who are still hoping to get to the show. And to have the spirit of Buck O'Neill, Satchel Paige, Bullet Rogan, Willard Brown, Jose Mendez kind of propel their dreams of getting to the show, man, that's good. That is good. And to have a new fan base learn about the history of the Monarchs and the history of the Negro Leagues and have them hopefully make their way to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, that is good. And then anytime that you can build perpetual revenue into the equation, that's real good.
Yeah. No, that's right. Hey, Bill still got to get paid around here. I keep trying to tell people. So I'm curious now. What is the idea as it relates to uniforms? I mean, obviously they'll have to wear, you know, uniforms like the other team, stuff like that. But is the idea before we go to break, Bob, to, you know, kind of have them do some retro?
They've already unveiled a home uniform. They did that in the ceremony yesterday, and it is inspired by the vintage Monarch uniforms, beautiful pinstripe jersey, a white jersey with blue pins and red outline, red Monarch on the front. Their new logo for the Kansas City Monarch Baseball Club is absolutely gorgeous. And people are already, you know, anticipating buying merchandise. And I can tell you this, guys, the more people that go through the turnstile, the more people that buy merchandise, the more people that buy food and beverages there, when they do go out to support the club, they are supporting the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum on top of the annualized gift that the museum will receive from the club for allowing them to license the name Kansas City Monarch. So this is a win-win situation for us. It is great that they wanted to bring this brand back to life, and it was genius, I think, of Mark Brandmeier to want to do this. And so we're excited to be a partner with the new organization and to see these Monarchs take the field. Now the pressure comes in the fact, Darren, that they got to be good now. You can't put those Monarch uniforms on.
Hey, in sixth grade, my team was the Monarchs. We were pretty good, so I think we gave it a good name to it.
Bob, before we let you go, look, I told you this in the text message. Now I'm not going to let you go. I'm gonna tell you this on the air. You got to have me be your brand, you're a brand ambassador, just like Todd's clothes, you know, got me game day ready for NFL when it's baseball season. You got to have me ripping some Monarch gear out there now.
I will get you hooked up.
Oh, man, that's what I said. Bob, look, in all seriousness, before we get you out of here, anything that you want to let, you know, any final words that you want to give to the people?
Well, you know, like I said, today was a very somber day for all of us, and you know, right now we're saddened by the loss of an icon. And we'll mourn his loss, but we'll cling to the fact that we had Henry Aaron for as long as we had him. We're gearing up for what is, I think, is still going to be a great 2021 and Negro Leagues 101 celebration that we'll announce in February 13th, as a matter of fact. So, you know, this hurts today, but again, it doesn't, you know, dampen our spirits to the point that we realize what we had in Henry Aaron and the fact that we are anticipating still having a tremendous year this year. As long as we got the support of those like yourselves and others who are listening to us, it kind of gives us the wherewithal to keep on keeping on.
Bob Kendrick, the executive director, joining us on Darren and Sterling here today on ESPN Kansas City. We'll be right back after this timeout.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. What?
I don't know what that music is. You got
Incubus?
You got coming back from.
Do you not know who Incubus is?
Yeah, no, that's before my time.
What, the early 2000s is before your time?
Yeah, trying to figure out who that guy is, or that group is, yeah. You know, man. But I told you, hey, man. You know, I come from Carter Broadcast Crew, man. That's
I know Carter. Hey, I call him. He's a great dude. I love him.
I understand that. So, I mean, you can't be hitting me with some stuff from Mix 93 or something like that.
Mix 93. Come on now. You know I don't listen. Know, come man. On now. Come on, Darren. Come
hey, man,
on.
Hold on. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I want to thank Bob Kendrick for joining us on the show today. Quickly, Sterling. Tomorrow night, Conor McGregor comes back to fight in the UFC. You got him winning.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really like the dude. I'm annoyed of his Brett Favre-ness. I just think he's he annoys me. I'm not going to lie. He annoys me, but it's you can't deny how good he is when he's in the octagon. It's just impossible to deny his talent. I just don't like the dude.
That's fair enough. If you have not gotten enough Chiefs talk from myself and Sterling, be sure to join us tomorrow night on Sports Radio 810 WHB from 8 to 11. We'll be on live doing our Red Zone special for the Chiefs AFC Championship game. We'll be taking phone calls. We'll be joined by Mayor Sly James. We'll be joined by Mayor Quentin Lucas. We'll be joined by Breland Moore. We'll be joined by Jeff Chedia, Steve Weisha, both of the NFL Network. Steve Walls will join us as well for the show. We'll also be joined by Jason Pearson. We got a lot of guests as we get everyone set for Sunday's AFC Championship game. And then, Sterling, before we get out of here, I need you to Dropbox this show to me because people want to get comments from Bob Kendrick.
Sure. I'll get you Bob Kendrick over there to you. That's easy.
Hey, everyone, please have a safe weekend. It's Chief winning weekend. We expect victory Monday. Talk about the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Bucks, or in Sterling's case, the Packers. We'll be out of here.